This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is the Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Now, here is the Glow Show.
We are back. We're back with the Glow Show. Gabby, how are you going?
The team is back together. Team.
And it is Highway Patrol time again. I love Highway Patrol.
I know you do.
Can we make it the band back together, isn't it?
It is the band. Mm.
Can we make it really, really interesting this week? Just not half an hour of talking about what kind of engine this vehicle has or
I don't believe
this
what
how big are the wheels.
Who bought this guy?
Get out.
Speaking of that new BMW.
I saw the BMWs.
Oh, okay, here we go. She's all about don't talk about it and then all get excited about it.
I was at Dawson Street yesterday. I was washing my police car because that's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw the big tanky kind of cars. You know those ones, Beck?
Yeah.
What are they called?
Well, they're the big Sog Rammy McBammy thing long.
Yeah.
Thing along.
They're Ooh, cool.
They are cool.
They're really cool. And then I saw the BMWs and I was going, what are they doing there?
And you liked it?
I did.
Yeah. Now, I've got to ask one question. What are you doing washing your own police car?
Well,
what's going on in the Vic Police Force?
Being down at South Bank now, I mean, we're out of the big city.
It's about discipline.
It is.
It's having a bit of pride about discipline. I washed mine today.
It was so dirty.
Mm.
And we had no water for the windscreen wipers.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't even see out the windscreen, so
you
we
know
washed
what?
It.
If I wasn't wearing headphones, I would cover my ears. I don't want to hear such a thing.
But it's clean now. It's sparkling. I use the broom. Mm-hmm. Everything. It's
good.
Great.
I'm glad to hear that you're doing your 32-point check at the start of every shift.
My God.
Well, I wasn't the driver. I wasn't the driver, but I did the 12 points.
I tell you what, if I was a police officer and they said, go and wash the car, I'd go, yeah, no problem. I'd go straight down to the High Point or Chadston. I'd go, here you go, fellas. And I'd go and have a coffee and a latte and sit back, relax.
Who's
come
paying
back
for that, William?
I would do it.
It was very therapeutic.
I would get cold.
It's quite cathartic, isn't it?
Yeah. Cathartic. That's a different way to look at it.
Anyway.
So what's been happening out there, lovely Beck?
Oh, so many things, mm-hmm. Will. So many things. It's been, you know, quite cool. So I think people are trying to get places a little quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps people that are a little cold whilst mm-hmm. commuting or working, like people on scooters and motorcycles. So the other night I booked an Uber Eats delivery driver.
Was he in a hurry, was he?
He was.
Mm-hmm.
Making a delivery at 115 k's an hour in a 70 zone.
Who said Uber Eats service wasn't
good? I tell
good?
You what, they're trying pretty hard to get that curry there. It's still
people
warm.
Are hungry.
They are.
But they shouldn't be that hungry.
Not that hungry.
What was his speed again?
115 in a 70 zone. He's wearing tracksuit pants and runners. No gloves. I mean, just the cold factor.
Mm. Amazing. He had a seat.
Well, let's not go back to that. Anyway, he unfortunately lost his license.
So he would lose his license on the spot?
6 months. There's 28 days, mm-hmm. so he can appeal if he wishes. And 28 days after the date of the offence, he loses his license for 6 months.
Wow.
So no more
Ubering. He's
delivering.
Lost his income?
That's it.
So he's lost more than just his fine of $450-something dollars.
Yeah.
I know getting food is very important to a lot of people.
I know.
But it's not worth losing your license over.
No, you know, those young fellows don't get paid very much for their deliveries. So I think, you know, perhaps being under pressure to get, you know, the more deliveries, the more money you get. But unfortunately, the risk is you get booked.
And I would like to actually say that he's got off lightly because the potential there was he could have killed somebody.
Well,
it's so easy.
And not wearing any protective gear other than a helmet, which incidentally didn't fit. He pulled the helmet off without undoing the strap, so that was another ticket.
Oh, geez.
So he's wearing an ill-fitting helmet, which belonged to somebody else, on a motorbike with no gloves, tracksuit pants, going like the wind, on wet roads. I'm not sure what he...
It's the whole shebang.
It is. Bit of a hamburger.
So it's technically what we call a temporary Australian.
It might be, yeah. very temporary. So bit disappointing, but these things happen.
Yeah. No, once again, look, it is a reminder out there is that, you know, we all get excited, we all get pressured.
Mm.
And, yeah, look, if you do note yourself going above the speed limit, just take five. Think about the consequences, not only the fine, but things can get more severe.
But, Will, even the protective clothing, that's really important. If you come off your bike and, well, you have got a helmet that's not fitting, it's not going to protect your head.
Exactly.
No, they just come off. I've seen it happen. They've just come off and become very unattractive people because you can imagine bitumen and the skin on your face.
No.
No gloves. The first thing you put down when you fall over, you put your hands down.
Yeah.
It's so not pretty.
It's not pretty.
Yep. You know, skin grafts on your hands, not fun.
No.
Makes life very difficult.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, when I was a teenager way back in the 80s, we loved our motorbikes and we just got our L's and we're all riding around like idiot teenagers that we were, and probably still are sometimes, but anyway. But I do recall one of my friends, he came off his motorbike in the wet wearing denim jeans.
Ooh.
Now, one would think, yeah, in the wet, denim, no problem. He actually got third-degree burns because of the, as he was sliding along the road, the friction that it created.
Oh, it's horrible, isn't it?
And he was burned. And I mean, you'd never imagine it. You'd think, you know, he was wearing riding boots, but denim jeans.
Yeah.
And so it really dawned on us, no, if we're going to ride bikes, leathers.
Yeah.
You know, you've really got to spend the money.
Yeah,
spend
or
the
Kevlar money jeans. Like, I ride a scooter to work every day, and, that's minimum. Minimum Kevlar jeans, boots with laces, preferably, because when you come off, if you've just got pull-on bluntstones, they will come off. Mm. They'll come off in a second. Armour in your jacket.
Yes.
I've got a really great jacket that's like a hoodie. It looks like a hoodie, but it's got armour in the shoulders and it's Kevlar, so it's quite light, great for summer, but will still protect you. Gloves with knuckle protectors, plastic knuckle protectors, and definitely a helmet, full face preferably. Open face, you're still going to get some pretty severe injuries, especially
and
dental injuries.
And spend the extra dollars on a better helmet.
Yeah, definitely. The amount of collisions I've been to with motorcycles or scooters where the person could have literally just gotten up and walked away.
Yeah.
If they were wearing the correct gear, as opposed to gravel rash, road rash, whatever you want to call it, or dental injuries from having open face helmets. Yeah.
It's not about looking cool anymore. You can still look cool.
You can still look super cool.
But you want to look cool.
I look super cool, Gabs.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't. But you want to look
me and my
super
red
cool
Vespa.
After a collision.
You
when
do.
You get up and you're not injured.
And you brush yourself off, like, you know, when people trip over and then they look back at what it was that tripped them over, like they were really upset at it, like stupid pavement. You want to be able to do that.
Well, my partner, when she was nursing, she's got some stories about after collisions with motorbikes. Well, not her with the motorbike, but the patient.
Nursing,
picking out bitumen from their body. Hours and hours and hours
Tap
of
out.
It.
Bing! Yeah. I'm out, thank you.
Yeah. And this is when they're conscious.
No, yep.
So please wear protective clothing and gear.
These people do cause some havoc out there. And
well, that's – well, you know, we've had some amazing work done to widen the Tulla Freeway, and a couple of it, like the Westgate Freeway, was widened a few years ago.
It took about 1,000 years to do.
Oh, mazillion years. Yeah. And there's widening projects going on left, right,
everywhere.
And center. The Tulla, you know, going all the way out to the ring road, that still, you know, hasn't been completed yet. And one of the things, unfortunately, that we've lost, and I say unfortunately because I am a little bit biased, is our emergency lanes. And they obviously are there for people who break down or have collisions or for emergency vehicles to get to where we need to go. So the solution, obviously, now is that we have lane control systems. So overhead gantries, I'm sure everybody's seen them, and if they're not displaying the speed for each lane, they're displaying if the lane is closed or if the lane is about to be closed. So if we have a collision and it happens to be in the right lane of the Tulla, you know, coming in towards Parkville, CityLink control room will close that lane with the overhead gantry and shows a red cross. And prior to the red cross, they'll actually put a little arrow saying change lanes because it's about to be closed. And one of the things that really annoys me, and I use the word annoy because it's not appropriate for me to swear, is that if I'm trying to get to a collision, especially where people are hurt, I need that lane to get there. And if it's peak hour traffic, you can imagine nobody really wants to change lanes. So I think it's important that people understand that if you drive in a lane that is showing a red cross, that is a red light traffic offence. It's the same as going through a red light at an intersection. It's the same fine. It's $404 and three demerit points.
Yeah, you don't want to do that.
But never mind that. If you're at the collision and you're the one hurt, how annoyed are you going to be at all the people lined up in that right-hand lane or whatever lane it happens to be that are closed? And I can't get to you, or the ambulance can't get to you, or the fireys can't get to you. So
let's reiterate this. If you or your loved one, and time is of essence, and the emergency vehicle cannot get to you.
If I literally can't get to you.
So, Beck, if you're driving along and you see that there's the little arrow pointing to say coming up soon, you're going to have to change lanes. Mm. At what point must you get out of that lane?
You can't drive in the lane as soon as you pass a cross.
Okay.
So if you drive under a cross in that lane, you've committed the offence.
Right.
So we give, between gantries is about between 400 and 500 metres. So you've got that long to change lanes. Now, if you come up to the red cross and you have to stop before because it's so busy, then you have to stop.
Okay.
And wait until somebody lets you in.
Okay.
But if you don't do that, then I have to be driving up with my lights and sirens on and I push everybody out of the way and all of a sudden people get out of the way. But that is still delaying. It took me 20 minutes to get from Moreland Road to Flemington Road exit on the Tulla the other morning just because people continually drive in that lane. Now, if you think you're not going to get booked for it, guess what? You are, because I get to the collision and I process the collision and the ambulance are there and everybody's doing their job and I'm waiting for tow trucks. Guess what I do? I go stand at the back of my police car and I book people. And I will book them until we open the lanes.
You just can only do it.
Them.
Okay, so one by one.
One by one, I intercept them. I grab their license number and I send their notice in the mail.
So technology's not there to
record. It's not an offence that can be sent in the post.
Like a speed camera offence. There's nothing set up yet.
No, it's not a strict liability offence in relation to that, which means that whoever's driving is responsible and then you have to nominate the driver. It's a limited liability, which means I have to intercept the person and ensure that they don't have an exemption for driving in that lane.
You've expressed this as a pet hate, so is this a serious problem? Is it?
Oh, yeah, 100%. There's a big difference between being able to render first aid to somebody in 5 minutes than 20 minutes. If somebody stops breathing, they give us a 10-minute window before there's permanent brain damage.
Yeah.
Now, if people are so keen to get to work that they're not going to allow that lane to be free and allow emergency vehicles to get there, then potentially somebody could die.
Yes.
Or potentially the longer that it takes us to get there, the longer that lane will be closed, which can cause more than one collision. So a red light is a red light. If it's a red cross, don't drive in that lane.
Mm.
And people often question, why is the speed limit so low when there's fewer lanes operating?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that comes down to the 40 kilometre per hour.
Yeah, so in that circumstance, yeah, we always ask CityLink, and they do it as a matter of course now, to drop the speed limit down to 40 like it's a roadwork zone, because we've got people working on the road. And so obviously that new legislation came in, passing emergency vehicles, which include SES, anyone with really flashing lights. And that is that, on approach, 40 Ks you have to pass. Now, I understand there's been some issues with the safety of pulling up to 40 if you're in a 100 zone or 110 zone, and I totally get that.
Mm.
At minimum, what I want people to do is change lanes. So if we're on a two-lane say we're on the Hume Highway and I've got somebody pulled over in the emergency lane and you're travelling the left lane, the least I want from you is to change lanes to the right. I don't expect people to slow down to 40 on a dime. I understand that that's can be dangerous. Mm. But I'm working on the road and I don't want to get hit at 100 Ks either. So it's just about having a little bit of forward planning. We always try and pull people up so that there's a lot of visibility, you know, coming up, you know, not around a bend or anything like that. Sometimes that can't be helped, though, depending on the circumstances, you know. So at minimum, please change lanes if you're on the freeway. But if you're on 60, 70, 80 K zone, you should have a sufficient amount of time to be able to brake slowly and safely and allow that area that I'm working on the road, for whatever reason, could be a collision, it could be I might just be booking someone, an Uber driver, for speeding. Who knows?
And common sense really says that if someone's pulled over with just a breakdown or they're changing a tyre, it makes sense to do the same thing, because we have had people injured and killed under those circumstances.
Well, you know, any job that happens on any of the elevated roadways, if somebody's stopped in an emergency lane, any of those jobs that come through to 000 are classified as priority one jobs for that exact reason, is that it's been recognised by the coroner that people that are stationary on the highway at a very high risk of being involved in another collision. And that's people having a look to see what's going on, or, you know, they're not aware of their surroundings very well, or just whatever other circumstance. So
I think you've eloquently answered a lot of the questions I wanted to ask. And when this legislation first came out, I actually thought it was a little bit of a laugh. I really couldn't get my head around that you'd doing 100 kilometres an hour, and we do have heavy traffic in this state. Then to then suddenly go to 40, I felt very dangerous, very unrealistic.
Yeah.
certainly on the Hume Highway, yeah, of course, move over. I mean, I understand the issues and the problems. Did this come about because of an incident that has happened in the past? Any specific incidents
We've had a few incidents. I mean, it's not directly related to speed, but there was a highway patrol member up in Benalla that was killed.
Yeah.
A significant amount number of years ago, maybe 10 years ago, on the Hume Highway.
Mm.
Now, the result of that, I believe, with the driver was fell asleep. But it's incidents like that and other incidents where they're close calls. And I think it's just been recognised that police working on the road are the same as roadworks. We have roadworks speed reductions to 40 because it's understood people are working on the road. It's got nothing to do, really, most of the time, with the safety of the cars. It's more about protecting the people working on the road. Now, this legislation or these laws have been in place in America, in most states of America, for a very, very long time. And it's managed and it's understood that if you're passing a police car with flashing lights, you have to slow down. Mm. I think it's 30 miles an hour over there. It might depend on the speed zone, but I'm not quite sure. So this is not brand new stuff. This has been happening everywhere. booze buses are operating at booze buses, as in, so the highway patrol members are the ones that wave the cars into the booze bus site. That is the most dangerous job I do.
Wow.
I have nearly been hit by cars so many times for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
Sometimes it's speed. Sometimes it's a drunk person. You have to have a look at what I'm doing. I'm trying to wave potentially drink or drug drivers into a small coned off area.
And they panic.
And they're trying to negotiate, or it might be stolen cars, or it might be any of those sort of things. There's been numerous occasions where members have been injured or have had very close calls because of the speed of drivers. So having drivers approaching a booze bus at 40 k's allows them enough time to stop, depending if I want them to go in or not, and it allows me enough time to jump out of the way if they decide for whatever reason they're not going to stop. So that's pretty much... We understand that it's not always
practical. Yeah, which is the important...
And we're very flexible, but if you frighten me...
Yes, you're going down.
You're going to be in a bit of trouble, yeah.
So just let me clarify. So if we're going on the Hume Highway, if I was to move over to the right lane, I'm not required to do 40 or I'm still required to do 40?
The legislation says you must do 40.
But you will exercise some common sense.
It's a common sense thing there. Yeah. If you're making an effort to slow down and you end up doing 70, I don't want you slamming the brakes on from 100 to 40.
Which is going to cause its own problems.
Of course, it is going to cause its own problems. And I'm pretty sure everybody recognises that. But it's about common sense. Apply the brake, slow down safely, change lanes if you don't think you can pass me at 40. If I'm working on the freeway, I'm very busy. I'm looking at a whole heap of things. I don't know who I'm dealing with that I've pulled over. Could be anything. Could end up in an arrest. It could end up in, a scrap on the side of the road. Who knows? Mm. It could just be old granny who, decided to do a bit of speeding, for example. But use your common sense. Just give me that extra lane. Give yourself a bit of extra space. You don't know what's about to happen either.
No. Yeah.
And I think if you slow down, if you're doing 110 and you see a police vehicle on the side of the road, like Beck says, maybe not slow down to 40, but if you slow down to 80, the people behind you are going to realise, okay, you haven't jammed on the brakes, but they're going to slow down too, and it's safer for everyone involved.
Yeah. A lot of people, when they've heard about this new road rule, have immediately jumped to the 100-110 zone scenario. Well, I can't brake to 40. Okay, we've discussed that, but 90% of the other scenarios that we're talking about, you can slow down to 40.
For sure.
And at the end of the day, you do not want to be the person that hits a police officer.
No.
You don't want to be that driver hits a police officer. And I don't want to be hit, please.
No. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, you talk about you never know what you see. It was probably about 3 months ago. I was in north part of town. I don't know the area. Probably near Collingwood somewhere. And I'm sitting at the traffic lights and this police car, 100 miles an hour past me. And I go, I know some people who drive those things, So I went and drove down into the road, got to a set of traffic lights and turned into Hoddle Street. And there was an accident scene. So anyway, slowed down, probably a little less than 40 because it was pretty much cut down to one lane. And emerging from the police car that passed me quite speedily was Beck doing the big run.
Was I?
Yeah, going to the aid of the... Okay. I know that girl.
Oh, I was running.
You were running.
Well, probably how novel for me.
A rare moment. I should have caught it on camera.
You should have.
Hopefully you saved someone's life.
Oh, back. Look, I'm sure I was doing something brave and amazing.
But always,
I was
always
for a coffee. Who knows?
That's probably what it was.
No, save someone's life, then the rewarding
okay, fine.
Coffee.
Yeah. So, yeah, so look, I mean, it does stem. Common sense is the best practice of the lot. And
yeah.
Make room, slow down, be aware. Because it also is amazing, too, the amount of stories I've heard from some of my friends who are in the SES of they said to me, if you're ever on Hume Highway and you break down and you go into the emergency lane, get out of the car and go and sit up on the side. And I went, why is that? He said, you'd be amazed at the amount of people that will then rear end it.
Oh, it's crazy.
So what is obviously happening, people are fatigued and they know that they have to sit behind cars and they're not concentrating and they wander over. It's amazing.
It really is amazing. I've been to jobs where people have had a flat tire and they sit in their car, you know, which in some circumstance is the safest thing to do, and then they just get rear-ended and, you know, seriously injured. If you're somewhere where there's some Armco railing, you know, the metal railing on the side, pop on the other side of that, because it's designed to catch a car and push it back onto the road so it doesn't go into a ravine or any other, you know, spoon gutter or anything like that. So just, you know, sometimes just assess your situation. Sometimes it's safer to stay in the car and, I mean, if you have no emergency lane, probably stay in the car. If you think it's probably safer to get out, then get out of the car and jump.
Yeah. Especially on things like the Hume Highway.
Yeah. And if you're involved in a collision, there's this amazing thing that happens when people are involved in a collision. They get out of the car immediately.
Pop the bonnet.
Yeah, no, but they do. Because they've been frightened, the first thing they do is they get out of the car. They don't want to be in the car anymore, which I can understand. But collisions are scary, and I totally understand that. But just maybe assess your situation first, especially if you're somewhere where there's no emergency lanes or there's, you know, high-speed traffic.
Yes.
Because you don't want it ending up worse than it was.
It is a tough scenario. My gut feeling, if I was involved in a collision, and depending on what vehicle I was in or I'd collided with, I would probably be inclined to get out because a fire. First thing I want to do is make sure I can get out.
Yeah.
You know, there'd be nothing worse than being... Because what happens is the structure of a car will buckle sometimes and the door will jam.
Or the airbags go off and there's explosions happening and the sound and all of that sort of thing frightens people. Understandably so, I would be as well. And they jump out of the car really quick, you know, put their hands up and they're in shock, understandably.
It is a tough thing to ask people. But look, if you're involved in a collision, once again, maybe take my advice, see if you can get out, because if something starts burning or going wrong, you want to be able to. But if you know you can get out, then assess what's going on outside as well.
Have a look at what's going on.
So this works both ways. I know.
Every scenario is different.
Every scenario is different, and you're under a lot of stress. In fact, you'd be stress maximum at that point. But just something to think about. And
if it's just a small collision, you don't need to leave your vehicles in situ for me to work out what happened. So if you're on the Tuller, for example, and there's no emergency lanes and both your vehicles are drivable,
get over to the left.
Take the exit and get off that road.
Yeah.
And go find a side street where you can have a conversation with the other person, and I can come down and chat as well if
need be, because police aren't always required.
We're not always required at collisions, yeah.
Incidentally, that reminds me of a question I've been wanting to ask is, especially on somewhere like CityLink where there are no emergency lanes unless something happens and they make it an emergency lane, as we discussed, if I am driving down there and I get the blues and twos, or the police want to pull me over for whatever reason, is it wise for me to continue driving and find a safe exit and a safe area, or am I required to stop there and now?
Good question, Will.
Yeah.
So the first thing is, I will never put the lights on to pull somebody over unless I know where I want them to pull over.
Right.
So if we're coming up, say you're in the right-hand lane and we're coming up the Tullamarine Freeway, I won't put the red and blue lights on until we're reasonably close to an exit. And then I'm going to make the assumption that you know that I want you to change lanes and pull over.
And get off the freeway.
And get off the freeway.
Find a safe spot.
Sometimes there's emergency shoulders on a lot of the new roads, like breakdown bays.
Yep.
And I will put the red and blue lights on when I know we're coming up to one. And by the time you go, oh, the police want me to pull over, and then you're looking around, there's a couple of hundred metres have passed by then, and hopefully you'll see the breakdown bay. Or you'll see a big painted traffic island where there's like an exit ramp or something like that. I don't want you to stop in running traffic.
Has that ever happened to you, Beck?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, all the time. It happens all the time. And what I'll probably do is I probably jump out and I give the person an instruction. Just keep going up and you'll see a breakdown bay on the left-hand side. Or take the next exit or just pull over there. And I would never deal with somebody in a running lane because that's stupid.
And dangerous.
And dangerous. But I normally decide where I pull somebody over, mm-hmm. and it's a little bit like billiards.
Yes.
So the white ball hits the red ball, and I'm hoping it goes in the pocket. Sometimes it doesn't go in the pocket.
So I guess
most of the time it doesn't go in a pocket.
If you're getting the flashing lights, just slow down, acknowledge,
yep.
and then look.
Yeah, if you put your indicator on,
yep.
it tells me that you know that that's what I want you to do, and I'm happy for you to decide where we pull over.
Yeah.
If you feel like it's a safer place or you know a safer place, that's fine, but I'm not going to follow you for 2 kilometres until you get to the exit that you wish to plan on taking in the first place. So it's just about a little bit of common sense. Oh, we want to have a conversation together in a safe place. I want to be safe. You want to be safe.
Mm.
Normally, 90% of the time, a police officer will not try and pull you over unless they know where they want you to stop.
Excellent
but
advice.
But there is 10%
that
might not know that.
And just keep on driving.
And don't even know we're playing billiards.
Yes. Wow. Well, Beck, it has been brilliant having you back.
Thank you for having me.
Will you come back again next week?
I think I will.
Oh, excellent. What do you reckon? We'll have her back.
Oh, yeah. There's always plenty to discuss, and it's always amusing. Very important information, but amusing at the same time.
I didn't realise I could talk so much, really.
We did.
And everybody else. Okay, great.
This has been The Glow Show. Make sure you download all our podcasts at joy.org.au/glowshow and listen to Joy on that 94.9 FM band, and YouTube. You stay safe out there too, please.
Will do.
Thanks, Will.
Thank you. See ya.
You've been listening to The Vic Police Glow Show, exclusive to Joy Podcast, presented by Vic Police LGBTI liaison officers and a range of Joy presenters. Head to joy.org.au/The Glow Show to find more episodes or search Joy 94.9 Glow Show on iTunes. Subscribe so you never miss an episode. Rate and review if you like what you hear.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.